You're listening to A Word in Your Ear with Professor Rolly Sussex, a podcast from 612 ABC Brisbane. For more information, visit abc.net.au/Brisbane.
Well, it's been a historical week for world affairs and some momentous words and phrases to match those events, namely Brexit. Rolly Sussex, hello.
Good afternoon.
Brexit.
Yes, is a blend or a portmanteau word. And a blend is when you take bits of two words and glue them together. So motel is motor plus hotel, and smog is smoke plus fog. So it's a very, very old-fashioned way of making words in English. Brexit and Bremain turned up quite early. On the other hand, they didn't have believe, which could have been, you know, rather than Brexit, because believe sounds as if you're believing in something as well.
Well, that's so right. It's got that connotation.
I have no idea who believed in what over there. So since the decision, we've also had Brigret, which is regrets at the Brexit, or even Brexpat. And a Brexpat is someone who is an expat, presumably as a result of Brexit. Now, there's a lot of Brits who are currently living in Europe, and I'm not quite sure what their status is. I have friends who have a farmhouse in France. Will they be able to stay? These are still
watch
to be
this
negotiated.
Space. Mm.
Other than those, however, there's been a whole rash of imaginary words about what might happen if some of the others wanted to leave. So there's been a Swexit for a Swedish exit if it happened. And even now, if the Czechs, which by the way is now called Czechia, the Czech Republic is Czechia, its new name, that would be a checkout, which was quite clever, all right. On the other hand, but it was said that Romania would be part of Bremania. You get all sorts of versions of this, but the interesting thing is that these words have taken root so quickly, and there's a thing called WOTY, which is Word of the Year. There is a very good bet that Brexit will be the Word of the Year, certainly in Britain and probably here. The Americans tend to do their own thing, so they will try and do something else.
I'm sure it's a hot contender.
It's a very hot contender because this word has been scoring so many millions of hits around the internet. I think the Brits are probably a bit sick of it by now.
Yes, but they're over it. Rolly, I tell you, our phone is running hot. Speaking of things running hot, shall we take some callers?
Why not?
Okay. Now, our first caller there, have we got you, Don?
Yes, you have.
Don on the Sunshine Coast, Rolly. He wants to know about the phrase, you know.
Okay. This is used at the start of something you're saying, right?
Yes, it's become common expression in people on the ABC who are being interviewed, and quite common actually. In some cases, some people from universities even are using it.
Oh, yeah.
It comes up about every second expression.
It's very common. Some of the time, it's just saying something while brain catches up, and there are quite a few of phrases like that, like yes, no, or or so. All of these are basically waiting for the thoughts to get organized so that you can start talking coherently. Now, as far as you know goes, it can have virtually no meaning at all. It's just a way of thinking, I'm about to say something which might interest you. But it can also be a little bit more than that. It means here is something which is of perhaps worth arguing or talking about. You know, I've been thinking about this. It depends a lot on the context. But certainly it's very, very common in speech at the moment. You wouldn't write it very much unless you were writing down the way people talk.
Yes, dialogue.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a dialogue thing. Whereas if I wrote, you know, it literally means you are cognizant of something, you know.
So sorry to interrupt. I was wondering because when they say you know, I'm saying, well, if I know, why are they telling me?
Right. And there are quite a lot of words that we utter without really making much meaning. If you say to someone, how are you in the morning? And they say, well, I'd like to tell you that my temperature is 37.35. And then they've got the wrong idea. This is just a formula, which is a way of starting a social interaction. And the other person says, oh, okay, how are you? And they're not really interested either. But you only notice if the thing's absent. Now, as far as you know goes, I don't think that has achieved that status yet. It's an optional thing, and we don't really mind whether it's there or not. But the trouble is that once you're sensitized to it, you will probably hate it, and it will irritate you terribly because it's part of a habit, and people are imitating it. It's a meme, which is going a bit viral, I'm afraid.
You know?
You know? I don't. We will avoid it.
Thanks for your question, Don.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Rolly, we also have now Margaret in Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaret wants to know, what's the definition of the word marriage?
This is a minefield. It depends on the jurisdiction and whether you're talking about religious definition or a social and civil definition.
Are you there, Margaret?
Yes, social.
Okay.
I just want to know if you think that a gay marriage is an appropriate word to use for a gay union.
Oh, look, I really don't know because according to the traditional values, when those are what was in the older Oxford Dictionary, it is a solemnized relationship between a man and a woman. Mm. However, nowadays, a large number of states in Australia and in the US and countries in Europe in particular are allowing gay marriage, and they allow the word marriage to be legally used about it. So I think there are two questions here. One is what you believe the thing means to you and your understanding. Mm. And the other thing is what it is actually, its status is in terms of legal values and in terms of religious values.
Yeah.
So there's one of these things which is on the move. Yeah. And in some places there are people, particularly the right wing of American politics, is pushing back quite hard and trying to restrict its acceptance as gay marriage. There are some people who say that it's fine if people get together, but they shouldn't call it marriage, they should call it something else.
Yep.
And it's not been decided, and I think it will be possibly a generation or two before whatever the result is turns out to be comfortable.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Margaret. Rolly Sussex with us this afternoon on ABC Local Radio Queensland, having a word in your ear, 1300 222 612. Rolly, Don in Toowoomba.
Mm-hmm.
John in Toowoomba wants to know, he has a few questions around the pronunciation of some common words. What are they, Don?
Good afternoon. Well, one of my real frustrations is with some of the broadcasters or commentators on the BBC, but there's one well-known radio personality on commercial radio, mm-hmm. whose common use is as follows. You will pay no interest at all. Instead of you will pay no interest at all.
Ah, okay.
And I notice a lot of the BBC reporters combine the two words.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. The other is go to a shop, Rolly,
mm-hmm.
and you're asked, are you right? And I say, no. What about you? And then thirdly, our dropping of ER on words like mother, mm. mother, father, father, weather, weather,
mm.
and so on.
Okay. First of all, at all, the rule about English syllables is that there is a common pattern inside a word where the consonant goes with the following vowel.
Right.
So, for example, people tend to say Mount Tomany rather than Mount Omni, right?
Yes.
The question is, if you say them as two words, it is absolutely clear, Mount Omni, and there's a little pause between the two, and the T belongs with the first word. But if you glue them together...
are you calling from?
I'm sorry about that.
It's all right. It's not your fault. If you put them together and at all are very often pronounced as a single unit, then there is a natural tendency, and it's a perfectly bona fide bit of English, that you glue the consonant onto the following syllable.
Ah, okay.
So that one's all right. In a shop, are you right is a relatively more recent formula for... something like, may I help you? Do you have any inquiries? And it's a kind of way of opening a conversation in a commercial environment.
Yes.
And it's only said by the shop attendant or the person behind the counter.
Yes.
And again, I think in a rather high-class establishment, you wouldn't find someone saying that. You know, may I help you?
I challenged a nurse in hospital one day when I was going to visit a patient.
All right.
And she said... "Are you right?" And I said, "Excuse me? Is that how you greet people?"
Yeah, well, said, in
what,
a case
what
like...
What should I say? And I said, "Can I help you?"
"Can I help you?" Implies that you look as if you're lost or needing of guidance or something.
Okay.
And I am in a position to provide whatever it is. I'd be happy to do so. Just let me know what. So that's okay. But "Are You Right?" is a general purpose inquiry, and it is not only commercial, now I think of it, but also, you know, if let's say I'm trying to get something very big and heavy into the car and I'm having trouble, and someone might come along and say, "Look, are you right, mate?"
Yeah.
Meaning, "May I give you a hand?"
Yes.
And it's actually quite a friendly way of offering help.
Sure.
Although the form of words is rather colloquial.
Yes.
Now, as far as "mother" and pronouncing the R goes, the R is not there at all in British English, Australian, South African, New Zealand, and so on.
Okay.
It is pronounced in North America, and it is pronounced in Ireland, and it is pronounced in a lot of British dialects.
Right.
Now, my folks come from Somerset generations ago, and down there they are butter, butter, and you pronounce the R after a vowel.
Right.
But one of the features of our English is that, unlike the Americans, we don't say the R after a vowel.
Right.
No, "is your mother here today?" Not "is your mother here today?" Right?
Yes.
There's a difference.
Right.
If the word "mother" is followed by a vowel, then we put it in. Right, mother-in-law,
yes.
Right, you put the R in. But pronouncing "mother" by itself, no R.
Okay.
All
right, I'll pass on all those. Thank you for
your
help.
Oh dear, it sounds as if we got in the middle of a discussion.
Thank you very much for your call.
Okay, Don.
Rolly, talking about politics, of course, our election coming up in a couple of sleeps.
No, we have one.
You hadn't noticed. And there's a lot of talk, Rolly, about a plebiscite, this word I've been hearing a lot about.
Yeah, and plebiscites and referendum. Or rather, referenda, which is the plural in Latin. All right. We've had 44 referenda in Australia, of which only 8 were successful. And of those 8, I think the most important one was in 1967 about Aboriginal people. That was very, very significant. It's interesting that in order to get a referendum through, you've got to have a majority of the states. That's 4 out of 6, so that's 2/3.
Mm.
And a majority of the voters. Now, the two territories, the ACT and the Northern Territory, their votes go into the count of the national voters, but they're not part of the count for the states.
Yes.
And so a referendum is binding. If it's passed, it has to go ahead. And we've had, as I say, 44 and only 8 got up. So that's not a great score. It's less than a fifth. A plebiscite is seeking the view of the people. That's the plebs. Old word from Latin. And a plebiscite is not binding. It's a kind of straw poll. It's seeing what people think.
Right.
And we had 2 in 1916 and 1917 about conscription, and both of them failed. So it's a way of the government saying, we'd like to check that we've got the temperature of the public opinion right.
They're sort of testing the waters.
Right. The interesting country at the moment is Switzerland, because rather than having direct parliamentary rule, they tend to say if there's a matter of public contention, or in particular, if Parliament does something and a substantial number of people in the community don't like it, if you can get 50,000 registered voters to sign a petition against it, then they have to have a referendum.
I see.
And so they're always going having referendums in Switzerland.
Get that critical mass.
That's right. You've got to get your critical mass, particularly about something that Parliament's done that a significant body of voters doesn't like.
Doesn't like.
So their volume, their way of doing things is a bit different from ours. Rather than letting Parliament go ahead and do its thing, right, they tend to say, we're going to go back to the people and make sure what they really want.
Yes.
Which is quite interesting.
Rolly, we've got another caller here.
Yeah.
Chris from Cairns. You're not happy with people saying "on the weekend" instead of "over the weekend."
That's correct. I'm curious about the common usage these days of people saying "on the weekend" or "something's going to happen on next weekend," even "at the weekend." Things can happen on a Monday or Tuesday or Friday, but the weekend commences, say, Friday evening and finishes, say, Monday morning. So wouldn't it be more correct to say that things happen over the weekend?
Mm. You're British?
I am, or was.
Yeah, all right, no, I can hear that. All right. The standard way of saying this in Britain until fairly recently, and in Australia until about 30 years ago, was "at the weekend." That was the most common one. "Over the weekend" was much less usual, but it was also allowed. And it suggested that during the passage of time, if you like, from late on Friday to early on Monday or whatever, something could happen. On the weekend is an Americanism. And it's been creeping in very rapidly, in fact been rushing in, for the last 30 years and is now standard. And you will hear at the weekend maybe 5% of the time. It's pretty unusual. Interestingly, by the way, you are now on a team rather than in a team. You know, you used to be in the team for Saturday's game. Now you're now on a team and on the Olympic team, not in it.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that's another Americanism, as well as Monday through Friday rather than from Monday to Friday. And there the rule is short tends to win. So that, you know, Monday through Friday is one word, from Monday to Friday is two words in different places. So your instincts are interesting. This is a change. It's underway. And I think on the weekend has won. And on the team has also won over the other versions which we're in.
Thanks,
Barry. Well, you might have a football game on Saturday and on Sunday, part of the series.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So then you have a series of games over the weekend.
That's right, yeah. The word for a single day is on, right? But when you get to a period of days like weekend, right, or in a month, in September or in October, you use in. And the tipping point between on and in or at and in has moved in our lifetimes. Yeah. Here we go.
Thanks very much for your call, Chris. Rolly, we now have Bruce in Toowoomba. Are you there, Bruce?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Now, I'm not going to trip myself up with your question, so I'll let you ask it directly to Rolly.
Okay, thanks, Rolly. It's just another one on pronunciation with the words schedule or schedule.
Oh, yeah.
What I've heard is pretty well both in Australia, 50-50, but I think it's the British that say schedule.
Yep, you're dead right. Schedule is the way it has been done for centuries, but and schedule is an Americanism. But, of course, you have SCH being in school.
That's exactly it. And that's what I've always understood.
And it's not
like
sure.
When you look in the dictionary, you won't see any other words apart from the old, you know, the
SCH
Austrian
ones,
shilling,
yeah.
All of them are pronounced sk,
that's
like
right.
Schedule, like school or scheme or
that's
schizophrenia.
Right.
Yeah. Or,
and that's because they come from Greek where they were sk. The school one is a good old Germanic word. And the schedule thing is an Americanism. And I think 20 years ago, schedule would have been, it would have stuck out a bit. People would have felt that's a bit unusual. Nowadays, particularly with people under about 30, it is certainly the default.
Okay.
Righto?
All right. Thanks very much.
Yes.
Thank you very much Bruce. Now, Rolly, Peter in Thornlands, he thinks that there's a current obsession with the use of the word so. Are you there, Peter?
Yes, I am. Thanks. Good afternoon, Rolly. Yes, this habit of beginning an answer by interviewees, starting with so, really annoys me because it's totally unnecessary. I suppose it's a brain catch-up word like we used to say well or something before that, but it's really annoying me. It seems to have crept in only reasonably recently.
Yeah, it's reasonably recent. Can you turn your radio down? We're getting a lot of feedback.
I don't have my radio on.
Well, it's coming from somewhere.
Okay, what we're going to do is turn you down there, Peter, and Rolly can answer your question, and you'll just have to listen because something weird's going on.
Something weird, yes. Okay, so as a sentence starter is now very common, and it's irritatingly so. So that someone who is beginning, rather than jumping right into the substance of what they want to say, you know, do you believe you're going to be selected for the team at the weekend? They will say, so, and it's a bit like, I'm now talking to you. Are we in communication? Can we start off? But instead of saying all of that, and in fact, you don't need it. It's a kind of bit of social glue rather than anything else. The other use of so, which is on the way up, is it was so fun, not so much fun, but so fun, making fun into enjoyable. It was so enjoyable. So fun is now becoming an adjective as well.
Rolly, a topic which you emailed through, which I'm particularly intrigued with, email etiquette.
Ah.
Because I have to confess, I'm very much in the habit which you're going to discuss, and that is by saying, like, hi, Louise, I hope you're going well.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to be saying that, I hope you're going well, or is it defunct?
Okay. We used to have formulae for doing letters when we actually wrote paper letters, and there was, you know, dear Fred or whatever, in which case you ended up yours sincerely. If it was dear Mr. So-and-so, you ended up yours faithfully or that sort of thing. Nowadays, emails are so ubiquitous. I mean, I probably have 120, 150 a day to answer.
Wow.
You're in a hurry and you haven't got so much time for niceties. Sometimes you don't even put in the name of the person you're writing to. You don't even say, hi, Louise. You just jump straight in. And people understand that this is not rude, but particularly with someone you may not see every day, but a little bit more infrequently, it sounds a bit abrupt if you go straight in.
It
so
does.
You need something to start off with.
An icebreaker. I often get,
I hope you are well, which suggests that I've been giving signs of looking infirm. Thank you very much. I did 30 k's on my bike at 6 o'clock this morning.
I'm quite well, thank you.
In Lycra, don't laugh.
Yeah.
You did laugh. Heartless person. So that we need some sort of formula, and our interactions with the other people are full of formulae like this, like, you know, how are you? Which isn't a request for a medical report. It's just, I'm here, I'm pleased to see you. Let's see if we're going to have something to say to each other.
Mm.
And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And likewise on an email, the starter, and it again really doesn't mean that, you know, I hope you are well or I hope you're having a good week. But it's rather nice if it's there because it gives some idea about personal involvement and interest in you.
Yes,
on
that's
the part
right.
Of the other
it's the personal engagement. And then acts as a little ease in then
that's
for the
exactly
rest
right.
of the content.
Yeah, I hope you are well. Next line, have you paid my bill yet? And it softens things up a little bit. And again, when you finish an email, do you put best wishes, warm wishes, regards, kind regards, whatever?
I'm a fan of the kind regards, but you know what I've noticed, Rolly? A lot of people just sign off best,
yeah.
Which is a bit weird, I think.
I first saw that with a colleague from MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, about 15 years ago, and I started using it, and suddenly my friends did as well. So I don't know whether I was the bridge between MIT and Australia, but it's certainly going off very, very quickly. And again, you don't pay much attention. If something is there, it's nice to see it. Sometimes people don't even put their name. They might use an initial. But there's not a lot which actually goes on, other than that. And we are still negotiating what is the sort of email that you write to a very close friend, which is getting close to an SMS, or something which is a little bit closer to a letter where there are some social niceties which are needed.
Rolly, your final word?
Yeah, I've got. Can I say a very quick word about mandate first?
Yes,
someone asked
of course.
Me last week. Do we have a mandate? The government will say, whichever one we get, is going to say we have a mandate to govern. Now, a mandate means that, in one sense, you got a majority, and so you are there to govern. But since Whitlam, it's also meant these are the policies that you, the electorate, have approved, and that's what we're going to do. But then John Howard invented core promises and non-core promises. So the word mandate, and one of the listeners took me up on this, and she's quite right.
Mm.
The mandate is actually quite fuzzy, and it depends on whether you're taking the broad sense of right to govern, and that, of course, depends on the goodwill of the upper house or not.
That's right.
Yeah. And finally, there is a last word. A lady said, my husband and I split on religious grounds. He thought he was God and I didn't.
Thank you very much, Rolly Sussex from the University of Queensland. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to A Word in Your Ear, a podcast from 612 ABC Brisbane. For more information, visit abc.net.au/Brisbane.